Welcome everyone, this is The Change Show with Simon Phillips and this week's special guest, Sue Askew from We Achieve. Sue, it's wonderful to have you on the show. We've actually just finished another conversation, haven't we, where we've been talking all things DC Index, all things, how do you actually get organisations thinking differently about where they're going? So this is like stage two of our conversation, but for the audience at home, welcome and tell us a little bit about yourself, Sue.
Yeah, we just have had that conversation, haven't we? Really good to be here. Thank you so much, Simon, for inviting me along. So yeah, my name is Sue. I'm a co-founder at We Achieve. We've been operating for 5-6 years now in the leadership development space. And actually, my business partner is, believe it or not, my husband, and he does some other things around business analytics. And so the company really has its roots in, we call it We Achieve, because there are lots of different areas in which people can have impact and get things done. So we're helping organizations to move forward in lots of different ways, and I really am really passionate about focusing on our leadership and team development and helping people remove some of the obstacles that are preventing them from getting to their objectives and achieving their goals, their KPIs. And that might be down to the way people work with on an individual level, or how people work at a team level as well. Yeah. My experience is sales and business development, so inherently there's a lot of that within the work that I do.
Yeah, you were saying that you've done a lot of work in that sales space, but actually the things that you do now, you know, whilst it may incorporate a sales team, for example, it's how does that sales team function within the whole organization? Is the organization set up in such a way that it can make the best use of the people in that team and their skills and their talents and things? So I'm sure we'll explore all that as we get into the...
I get really passionate about how sales and operations work together. Traditional corporate spaces, it can be a real area of tension and challenge to deliver for customers. But I am really passionate about getting in there and making that work better, because that's really key.
Brilliant. Well, this is The Change Show. We like to talk about all things to do with leading change. So tell us about some of the key milestones, if you like, in your career. So, you know, where did you start? What attracted you into this space? What's the journey been like along the way?
I was thinking about this before I joined you today, because I was talking to my son about getting a job. He turns 17 next week. And I was talking to him about my first job. And so I started as a Saturday girl in Superdrug, and I won't go through my CV step by step. The reason I was sharing that story is that I went down our local high street and went into every shop to ask them if they had any jobs, and I went into 50 shops.
Oh, well done.
And I told this to my son. He's like, that's nuts, Mum. Why would you do that now? And obviously there's a different way of getting in your career started now. I think it's opened up so much with what the opportunities are. But I think that the way that I approached that is kind of how I approached getting my career started. So I went to a recruitment fair at the end of my university course. I'm a historian at heart, but that's not, I wasn't going to be an academic historian. So I went to a recruitment fair and met a lot of companies and talked to a recruitment company, and they suggested I interview for a role in sales support. And one of the things about me at university was I had a lot of jobs whilst I was at university, because I decided to buy a flat early on with my student loans. I think I might be the only person that's done that with their student loans. But I had this sort of financial drive. I had to make sure that I got a job quickly. And I wanted to get, I knew I wanted a career of some sort in business, because I could see that gave lots of opportunity for different learning. So I started at Experian in a sales support role. And in my interview, the guy that was interviewing at the time said, I think you've made a mistake on your CV here with the dates of your sort of your part-time jobs. And I said, no, I think I've got that all correct. And he said, it looks like you have 3 jobs. I said, yes, I do. So I was running 3 jobs at the same time as my degree. So I left those, and I think getting into that corporate world, Experian gave me a real opportunity to work across multiple sectors. I worked in automotive, FMCG, financial services, learned so much about the corporate world and how a huge I mean, experience the juggernaut of an organization, how that operates, was a really a great experience for me.
What do you think were the key things you took away from working in multiple industries?
I think really that the challenges that people face with getting things done are the same across many industries, humans struggling to get things completed and finished. But I think having an awareness of just how different industries operate, supply chains, the organization of those industries, for me, just gave me a really good broad business awareness that I think is invaluable to be able to understand actually humans are humans, whatever organization they work in, but actually there are some real differences in those industries that make those jobs more challenging or even more interesting. So I loved, yeah, jumping from different industries gives you that.
Okay. So how long were you with Experian?
Nearly 10 years, something 10 like years. That, yeah.
Did you go straight from there into your own business?
No. So I moved through the sales teams into a sales leadership role. Mm-hmm. And then I was asked to join another team that was forming a new area, forming a market research division. And I think that was a real game changer for me in terms of a changing moment in my career, because it gave me some of that management experience, but also working in building up a new part of the business. Yes. So somebody else had the creative idea to bring that to life, and I can come in and then get to work to build that up and build a team and build the revenues from there, which is what we started to do. I then left there and joined another organization called Research Now, where I was able to do that on a bigger scale.
Okay, I think you've just given us some clues there as to your GC Index profile. So as you know, the chain shows powered by the GC Index, and it's wonderful to get GCologists involved in the show, because what we found is the huge enthusiasm people have for using the GC Index, and, yeah, and the people that have used dozens of other tools to try and shift, you know, create those shifts inside teams, inside organizations, and yet the enthusiasm for the GC Index and the way they're embracing it is quite incredible. So come on, tell us a little bit about your GC Index, and tell us about it in more detail in the context of that shift that you were saying, where you've got that opportunity to build that team.
Yeah, I totally agree with everything that you were saying about the power of that. We've used other tools in the past that just can give you some insight as to why you might show up in a certain way in a conversation, or how things are operating for you in the way that you work, but actually to allow you to really understand where you can have that impact and make a difference for a new business area or a new part of an organization is, for me, the real power of that. I felt that very personally. So I'm a 10 implementer and a 9 strategist, and I have got an awful lot of energy for the other side of the scale, the proclivities. And so when I was talking about that shift at Experian, and again then when I was at Research Now, was if there's an area that is new and developing, I'm able to see where that can go and see the potential of it, and I can't wait to roll my sleeves up and get in there and see how we can build it. And the implementer will always overrun that, and let's get on with it and let's do that. And in a sales and business development role, and I've seen this quite a lot in the clients I work with now, but also I can think back retrospectively to the way that salespeople are quite often hired and recruited in, is that you look for someone who will roll their sleeves up, get on the phones, get some clients in. And so we hire high implementers quite often into those sales roles, and it can really deliver, and it has some drawbacks there too. But I think taking an idea and making that into a viable business unit it was an opportunity for me to really have that impact. And certainly at Research Now, I really felt that there was an opportunity to do that, build a team that were more than likely quite high implementers as well, but also added a bit of polishing in there too, to bring quality, a real high level of brilliance to the work we were doing. Mm-hmm. And we weren't doing anything that was brand new, but we were building something that had been identified as an area for growth. So when you look at through the lens of the profiles, through the lens of the proclivities, you can see how, okay, if we have that innovation already, we have those ideas, how do we make them a viable business unit that's going to be profitable, that's sustainable, that can scale?
We quite often talk about the impatience of implementers, and I like to talk about implementers and polishers as being at the either ends of the delivery scale, if you like. So the implementers get things started, loads of energy, but start to peter out around about the 80%. At which point the polisher says, okay, leave it to me, let's make it as it can be. Did you find that once you'd got it all established and once you'd put it all in place, that your energy started to peter off, or did you just find other avenues that you could grow and develop that would enhance it even more?
Yeah, I think you're right. When we definitely had in the team, from an operational side, higher polishers that were able to fill in that. I think as that grew, I definitely, my energies and my attention began to get drawn into other things. We were doing a culture transformation program in the organization at the time, and I was asked if I'd like to get involved as a coach, as a facilitator for the kind of internal side. And I was like, that would be incredible. I'm excited to do that. And I think that was a bit of a shift for me, is to, first of all, I was doing that and my day job, and I'm quite happy to do many other things. I keep that energy of lots of things going on. High implementer would be happy with that. Three jobs before, probably. I quite happily have a number of things in my role going on. I remember a moment looking at my kind of to-do list, and as a high implementer, I have a to-do list that I love to manage. Yeah, but I looked at it and I thought, this is the same list as I had 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And I think that for me was a real turning point. And I think if you maybe that's a strategist element in there too, saying, this isn't moving. Now we've come to maybe a plateau, and am I the one to take it on or forward? Am I the one to take it forward, or am I the one to go, well, now where's the next challenge for me? And I decided it was, where's the next challenge for me?
Yeah.
So I decided to spend a bit of time not doing anything at all to see what came out of that.
Okay.
And so I stepped back from work for a few months and had some time off to decide where it went. I looked at a startup. I looked at going into a very similar role in another organisation, like a competitor to where I'd been. Nothing is exciting or got enough to it. So I talked to the culture change group, which was HPWP and some other partners as well. And I have a number of different avenues that I can go down for clients, but I'm pretty passionate about the high performance, because I'm able now to do work with clients in lots of different ways. I'm not fixed to a specific approach.
Yeah.
And we can bring in tools and elements and different things that are appropriate for those situations, and I really love that flexibility.
So as an arch pragmatist, how did that influence your thinking at that time, do you think?
When you're thinking about a big shift in your career or change, then there's always questions to be answered about what might that look like, what sort of revenue would you want to turn over, how do you get security with your income and that kind of thing. And I think the pragmatist in me is, stop worrying about it, let's get on.
Yeah.
And let's do something and see how it goes, rather than trying to make everything perfect before you kind of launch. And I think if my business partner and my husband, he's a high polisher, so he brings a lot of polishing to the work that we do, but I would probably have launched with a piece of paper and some ideas and just gone with it, rather than, let's get organized about that and what that might look like. But I think it gave me that pragmatism, was like, I'll just get out there and see. So I networked heavily. I think that element of just putting some energy out for me as a high implementer, get out there, get out and talk to people, feel like I am actually doing this already, then made that actually a bit more of a reality. So I built up this network that created contacts and work, and it began to take off from there. So I think the pragmatism was like, yeah, get your coat on, Sue, go out and meet some people.
That 10 implementer just slightly overriding the 9 strategists, because the 9 strategists would want to have some clarity and understand how some of the decisions that are being made are going to influence what's moving forward. And yes, you had some insights to that, but it was much more focused on what am I doing to try to move to the next stage, which is very much the implementer way of looking at it, isn't it?
Yeah. And I think once I could see that there was lots of opportunities in different ways across many different clients, then the implementer calms down a bit. It's okay, well then the strategist mindset can help plan forward and get and make that more of a structured business that actually has all the elements of a successful forward moving business. So yeah, very very much my thought process. Thank you for that.
Well, I wanted to clarify it because I work with so many people in that career space who are looking at the chasm. You know, they're here today, feel safe. They have an inkling that they might want to do something different, but they're seeing a chasm in front of them rather than something that, you know, do you remember that Indiana Jones film where he had to step out in faith and suddenly the bridge across the chasm, if you like, appeared. And it can feel like that to some people. It's like, I have no idea where I'm going next and I don't want to take that leap of faith. I want some more security. So what was in your mindset then that helped you overcome that real challenge?
I think it's, you mentioned impatience as something that happens quite a lot in implementers. And I think that I am quite impatient. If I'm excited about something, I want it to happen as quickly as possible. The pragmatic question is, where would you like to be? Do you want to go back to what you were doing or do you want to move forward? It's time to step into the unknown a bit. And also I think in a pragmatic sense, well, if it doesn't go that well, then you know that you have something to fall back on. You could go back to the career that you left, secure a role, and you know that you're able to at least exist in that for a period of time. You might not want to do that long term, but if this didn't work out short term, you haven't lost anything. You've had an opportunity to try on the shoes and to see how that fits and to see how you were outside of the security of a big corporate company and how you operate completely alone in that, and how did it feel? And it's okay if it doesn't work. I think pragmatism allows you to do that, right? You can say, well, what are the facts? You can give it a go, doesn't work out, you can go back and do those things that you're more certain of.
Definitely. And you mentioned there that your business partner and husband, big polisher,
yes.
What were the conversations like? Because again, that can be another contributing factor to help people make those big changes, but it can sometimes be an inhibiting factor if the partnership that you're in is weighed down, if you like, by a lot of worry. So how was that conversation for you?
Yeah, many conversations. I can remember a conversation where, and maybe people might think, God, I couldn't possibly be in a business partnership with my life partner. How do you manage that? I need some space from them. But there's a lot of humor, and I think that's something that I love in our business as well. But I remember a conversation about the website design. We were going through the sort of structure and flow of the website and what would be, you know, what would be here, what would be there. And Luke was really headed down a real detailed path. And I was like, I just can't talk about that level of detail anymore. Can't we just, that bit's done, let's just move on. And so sometimes there is that just sort of bubbling up frustration of, God, can we just get that out the door? Because we could debate this forever.
Yeah,
on the flip side, he will bring such a level of quality to some of our outputs. And, you know, I might rush things and to get them to a delivery stage. And he just brings such a level of excellence to that and can just slow things down a bit and say, we need to revisit it, or, you know, that's just needs a bit of work before that goes. Or we just have those good discussions where you just bring that different perspective in. And so I think it's actually an incredibly powerful combination. And if you're, you know, if you're looking at a team that has a lot of high implementers and they are producing a lot, bringing a polisher element into there doesn't necessarily mean it will slow down. And I think people sometimes worry about that with the polisher proclivity. Oh, that means we're going to slow right down. A polisher with a strong pragmatic element too can easily make those decisions, but they're going to question, is it good enough? And I think that brings that for our business has been really, really good.
And we're going to talk about the sort of team dimension of all this in a moment after the break. But I just wanted to share with you a little phrase I heard about polishers earlier this week, and it struck a chord. And there was a polisher in the conversation who just went, they almost like melted. It's like, yes, absolutely. But it was basically polishers like to make things beautiful.
Yeah.
For the person who is involved, the polisher in the conversation, they would never have used that language. It wasn't, you know, part of their lexicon, if you like. But in the moment, it's like, yeah, actually, you get me. I understand that. I can, you know, that really resonated. For implementers and strategists like yourself, that process can seem a bit slow and arduous when you just want to get things finished. But as you say, when you reflect back and you look at it, it's like, yes, that's the best outcome it could be.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, make it beautiful. I love that. I'll steal that if that's okay.
I think I stole it from Dr. John anyways. Is this okay?
Belongs to us all.
Sue, let's come back after the break and I want to talk to you about more about We Achieve and specifically around this high performance workplace stuff that you're doing, because I think there's so much richness in there to make change happen. And I think that's where organizations are sitting right now. They're looking at a huge universe of change around them. And it's like, how do they navigate that? And I think with your high performance workplace solutions, you've got some insights that might actually help them start that journey. So let's come back and have a talk about that after the break. Welcome back. This is The Change Show with Simon Phillips. We've been talking all things, it was such an array of topics that we talked about before the break.
That's because I'm an implementer. I'm like,
oh yeah, I know what we, but it was so wide ranging, following from, you know, I think it's whatever, I'm guessing it's about 104 jobs now, is it, you've had in your... And I mean, I'm surprised you let your son wait until he was 17 before you booted him out to get a job. But anyway, welcome back. I'm with my special guest Sue Askew from We Achieve. We were talking about your career before the break and how you basically launched yourself into your new business by just getting out there and talking to people and testing ideas and thinking. And I think that's an undervalued approach, because quite often people sit and do tons of desk-based research.
Yeah.
Thinking about, you know, what might my business look like? How might I piece that together? But actually, there's nothing better than going out and just seeing if there's any appetite for what you're interested in sharing with the world. So thanks for sharing that story, because I think that's a really valuable insight as to how to really get motoring with a new business. So, Sue, tell us a little bit more then about We Achieve. What's the work that you focus on? Who did it help the most? Anything in that sort of space?
Yeah. So I think the work that really forms the lion's share of what we do is in using HPWP, the high performing workplace element, to build training courses and support coaching leaders to start to transform the basis for teams and businesses to operate. And then from there, really, I love adding in the GC Index to add a real lens into then making sure that people are able to have the most impact in their role. So there's a couple of stages to how we approach things, but typically a client will look to work with us when there's potentially some blockers or some reasons why things aren't flowing that well in the organization.
Yeah.
And the real strength in what the high performing workplace elements bring is to that reflection of the business about, well, how are we set up? How are we operating? Are we in a mindset of more of a traditional workplace with lots of hierarchy and policies and process that might be limiting us, that might feel like that's comfortable in the way to structure the business, but actually we are that's stifling creativity and it's preventing people from really loving their job, right? And really enjoying what they do because they're kind of in the constructs of a project manager or a salesperson or those roles. So
would you really say the high-performing workplace approach is more in tune with fixing things or with enabling things? And what I mean by that is, you know, because you mentioned clients quite often call you in when they've hit a barrier or they've got some challenges, but I think I heard you say in the first part as well that it can be quite good at orienting and helping people move forward as well. So where do you think it sort of plays best?
It's absolutely enabling them. Well, we're not here to fix. It's, you know, I think in any coaching discussion as well, all the answers are already there. It's just, I think in some organizations, just the very way that they're set up prevents them from seeing the way to resolving their own challenges and moving forward. So it's a process really of reflection and going, well, where are we now and why are we here, and where would we really like to be? And the elements that we work with just trigger some of those thoughts. So, you know, what are the assumptions that we've made about the people that we work with, the clients, about the way the business should run? How does that make us behave? So how does that, if I've made these assumptions about how things should be or how people should operate, how does that make me show up? And that can be a fundamental shift for people to say, I've been making all these assumptions about how we should be doing things, or what Simon should be doing in his job and why he shows up the way he does. And that's really just an awareness piece and looking at actually what is going on here and what can we do. And so from that, you've got an opportunity to start to build. You might build trust, more open communication, looking at how people's skill sets are developed, but with that view of changing that sense of this is how we've always done it, these are the processes we should follow. Let's question that. Let's go, well, why are we doing it that way? And what would it get us? Because really, at the fundamental, at the basis of that is that if we can get our great communication and trust with the people that we work with, we have an opportunity to collaborate and allow them to have a real influence in the organization. And we've talked about this before, Simon, about how getting people to innovate and be part of the decision-making process is incredibly powerful. It has its challenges and there's some difficulties around big organizations, how they make that happen. But the more you do that, the better ideas you get, the more people want to be involved and move forward, right? And the more people are committed to the organization rather than compliant. You can tell them to do it or tell them what you're doing and they'll essentially get on with that. But once you have real commitment, then that will drive real high performance in an organization. And no matter where you want to take it, where the organization's going, then you're all on that same path. And I think bringing those ideas out, I hear it a lot in big corporate organizations. Well, there's no point in me suggesting that, or there's no opportunity for me to change anything or have any ideas here because everything's fixed, or I'm just too far down the ladder to make a difference. Or leaders that say, well, I really love everyone to be more involved, but I'm just not hearing any ideas from people. They're not coming forward with other ways of doing things and solutions. And so at multiple levels, that can be really powerful and really shifting. So I love that. You can tell I like talking about this stuff. Right? Come on, let's implement it. Let's go.
I know exactly. I was thinking the resistance that you get inside organizations is that this approach takes a lot more time up front. And, you know, and there's probably a slight implementer mindset going on in those leadership circles when they're thinking, well, hold on. I just want to make this happen now. I love the idea. Let's just get on with it. But actually, as you say, you need to involve everybody in the process. And it's not about consensus. It's not about, you know, I've got to go and talk to every single person in the organization. But it is about allowing people to have a voice and a say and contribute their good thinking. I mean, I remember doing one project in a hospital where the best breakthroughs that we achieved, and it was a multi-million pound improvement in the end, the best improvements were from the porters and from the key administrators, if you like, in the reception and that sort of area, the administration of the input of patients into the process. That was where all the big improvements came, and yet they'd never been asked for their opinion in the past. Yeah. It wasn't just a case of, you know, not on this, in this scenario. They'd just never been asked. And, you know, that doesn't always happen, but you have to put some trust into the fact that if you ask people for their opinions, you're going to get some good insights.
Yeah, yeah, you're going to get some ideas that are going that you wouldn't have got from your leadership group or from your own head. Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Yeah.
So you have this very engaging and inclusive approach to helping organizations understand how things are happening, where the improvements can come from. When it comes to making the plans for implementation and moving it through that process of change, if you like, what are the sort of the key insights that you've garnered over the years as to how to make that transition from thought into action successful?
That's a great question. I think it's, and there are a couple of ways I think I could answer that. But what first comes to mind really is that, well, once you've, certainly with using the high performance workplace elements or even the GC index, once you have that level of insight and a new view of things, it can be very, we can easily get back into the weeds, back into the way things were and back into the run and business as usual. Mm. And sometimes people's objectives is BAU, let's just get BAU sorted. And so I think that the power comes in finding ways to keep those that vision alive in the organization and in yourself around what the changes you would like to make. And this is where my strategist mind comes into play quite a lot, into how do we make that stick? And I certainly see there are a number of ways that organizations make that happen. So first off, leaders that are accountable to each other and that have that level of agreement that this is where you want an organization to go or how you want the changes to work. But then different forums for different levels of the organization to be involved in that and to keep that momentum going by keeping communication channels open. And showing commitment to that. And I think accountability, certainly in the work we do in HPWP, comes right at the core of that. It's like you could set a number of meetings up where you'll go to discuss this. You could put a number of business objectives together. But if the organization isn't accountable and wanting to be accountable for these shifts and changes, then there's maybe more work to be done. But if you have that level of accountability, that we own that, and the shifts in this organization or the shifts in the way we work can happen if we are all aligned on that, and you shift from that victim of, oh, it's not going to work because of this, it's not going to happen, into this will happen because of us, then I think it's about keeping that energy alive. You need a strong vision and an awareness of how to get there. But it is, we work a lot on that accountability piece, because there are many strategies you can put in place, but I think it actually comes from a very personal accountable point at the center of it, really.
Yeah, that's fascinating, because literally yesterday I was working with a team that is trying to think through how they're going to be different, because they've really struggled. There's a new team that's coming together, and I asked them to write as a final bullet point on their list in terms of how are they going to make this shift. I asked them to write 100%, and then I said, so what do you think that means? And you know, the various ideas and thoughts about what it means. And basically we revealed then in the conversation, it means each person around the table is 100% committed to what it is they've just written in the 15 bullet points above. And once you say that, and you ask each individual to think about what that actually means in terms of how they show up, the energy that they're bringing, the conversations that they have, how they report back to other people, how do they keep thinking about making sure everybody's included and understood. And it has a massive impact just by, you know, three numbers and a symbol. Made a dramatic impact, because it's the thinking that it triggers, isn't it? Because as you say, quite often people, it can be quite easy to write or say something under the heading of commitments, but it's like, until you make that tangible and real, it doesn't go anywhere.
No, I think that's great. 100%, I'm in. Yeah, we're all aboard on that. I think that's the kind of energy that you're looking for to sustain that sort of change over time, for sure.
Definitely. Sue, have there been any occasions in your life where you've had to go through, change your thinking, maybe a significant event where you've had to apply some of this knowledge that you have to get through a challenge of your own?
There were a couple of things that come to mind. I'm sure everybody says that, Simon, that there's what would I pick that really requires this? But we talked a lot about my kind of pragmatic side, and I think building up an awareness of how my pragmatism can really help has been important for me. And there are a few events over my life where I really needed to be extremely pragmatic. For a period of my life, I was a single mother with a full-time sales career that worked many hours, that over hours. And at the same time, my mother was extremely unwell. And that meant I needed to balance how I supported my son and how I was around to be a mother, be at hospital visits, support, you know, all this kind of infrastructure around a family member being in hospital, all the logistics in there, and delivering my job at the same time. And I think that really threw into light how I could balance a number of things going on at any one time, emotionally and at work, but also draw on some of the relationships I was able to have at work and outside of that. So my work family, at that time, very supportive of my team, allowing me a lot of time away, but also my urban family. So a network of mums and other parents who helped support me at the time. And I think being able to build up that network of people that were able to support and bring different things to just allow me to continue to exist and at least function on some level across those areas, be a daughter and be there for my mother, and then be a mother myself. So really that pragmatic, I've got to crack on. I still need to work. My son still needs to go to school. The washing still needs to be done. The shopping still needs to be done. But I've also got to go to the hospital and do these things. So that pragmatic side and really came into play there as a way of keeping going. But also this kind of, I always think of that strategist element of planning. Well, on Wednesday, this needs to happen. And then in a few weeks time, that's happening. I need to plan ahead for those things. So I really felt that at that time in my life, I had to draw on those skills. But knowing who can help me get there too. And maybe there's a bit of playmaker going on in there as to who could help me make that happen.
Yeah, wow, what a story. So how did you look after yourself in that period?
I don't think I did initially. I think I think all of us run in any difficult situation on adrenaline for a bit, and sometimes that has different effects on people. For me, adrenaline got me through the first part, and being a high implementer, if I felt that I was doing something having an impact, so was I helping my mum feel better by visiting her, and that gave me some energy. Was my son feeling kind of secure, content, happy enough to sort of go to school, homework, getting reading, having enough time with me? Was that working out? So I got a lot of energy from feeling like I had that impact on those people, and that does drive me a lot. So with my family now, I have a young daughter, and knowing that I'm able to help those people and help the people that I love to just get on with their life in a daily kind of way gives me energy. So that can hide the fact that you're not looking after yourself, because I'm feeling I'm okay, everybody's good around me, so that's great. So I think it caught up with me. I got very tired. You know, I certainly didn't have any time to relax. I did end up then also doing a lot more running, a lot more exercise, just to clear my head and to channel different energy. So I think at first adrenaline, once that left in, then I realized I needed to look after myself, as this was a long-term problem.
Yeah.
And I wonder if for implementers, it catches up with us quicker and we could, because we run too hard at that sometimes, maybe.
And it's funny, isn't it? Because exercising sounds like it's counterintuitive. You're already doing a whole load of things and now you're going to put something else on your agenda, which is exercise. But as you say, it re-energizes you. It gives you the boost that your body needs to actually make it through the rest of the activities of the day. So, yeah, but it's definitely an implementer strategy, isn't it?
Yeah, I'll do something else. Yeah.
Wonderful.
The end of that time, I decided that I'd climb a mountain, so I did a mountain climb of Mount Toubkal in Morocco. Yeah. I got to the top and it was an incredible experience. But I think that was like you say, that where to channel your energy when you are in a sort of high energy space.
Yeah. And I'm imagining you on the top of that climb, looking out over the horizon, thinking, that was an interesting chapter in my life.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, I had to give a bit of perspective. That was an interesting time. Great word for it there, Simon. Thanks for that. Yeah.
Well, it's a strategy I thoroughly recommend to people. If you can get out in nature and get to a point where you can see all around you, it can fundamentally shift the way you look at the world in the moment. But also, if you stay there for a little while and ask yourself some good little questions, like, you know, so what does all that that's just happened mean to me, and what's ahead, and how can I tackle that in a way that really enlivens me, or whatever. You can open your mind to all sorts of ideas, can't it?
Really did. Yeah, I did it was a bit of an emotional moment. I had a bit of, I'm going to push some of this stuff off the mountain, and I'm going to take in some of this other stuff around me. And I think that was, if you can get that space and somewhere where you really can just totally step out of the situation, it's really powerful if you find that.
Brilliant. So thank you for sharing that story. I think that will inspire so many people. I mean, how you managed to keep everything going at the same time, I'm sure, as you say, loads of adrenaline involved in there, but great to reflect back on that one. We're now at the most important part of the show, you know, all of that work stuff, never mind about that. What's a record from the 70s, 80s or 90s that lights you up? It may be related to your story, it may not be, but it's one that you want to share with the audience.
Yeah, this was tough, right? I'm sure everyone says that too, but what a pleasure to pick something. There were a number of tracks, but I've decided to pick Sweet Dreams by the Eurythmics, which is from 1983. And I find that it's on many levels energizing, uplifting, forward thinking, and just a really good track. Gets everybody moving, and I love that.
I think this was my first Eurythmics record.
Oh really? Yeah,
it's got that driving synthesizer, hasn't it? It's just she even says a word. But what I love about the Eurythmics, and particularly Annie Lennox, is the purity of her voice. Sure I'm not the first to say that, but it's so distinctive when you hear it on the radio, such that I've heard tracks that I hadn't realized were hers in the past and just immediately recognize, yeah, that's got to be Annie Lennox. And you know, could be a totally different type of music, but it doesn't really matter because she has done a fairly diverse background.
She has, she's done so much, and you know, the things she wouldn't know she'd have got involved in, and you know, she's had her own career of her own, but also the work with the Eurythmics, and it's an incredible person. Yeah, I love her work.
This record come to mind because of the time. Can you put yourself back in 1983 and remember, you know, what was going on? Is that why you've chosen it, or is it one of those ones that has just been there for you over the years?
It's a been there track. I think the number of times when you've heard it and you're like, I don't know, with friends or wherever, it's just popped up a number of times over the years, and it just lightens everything. It's just like you say, the music, the synthesizer in it just gets everybody's energy up. And I think I connect to times where I've felt energized, and whether that's on the dance floor, I can't resist that, having a bit of a boogie, or just being uplifted. And so I think it's timeless, even though it sounds very 80s, it actually, the lyrics and everything about it are just very current to so many situations, that it just fits. So it's something, the track that's always been there, I've always loved. So
brilliant. Let's hear that then. The Eurythmics and Sweet Dreams. The Eurythmics and Sweet Dreams, a favourite of both Sue and mine. And another little tip for people that I like to share is build up your own playlist of songs like these and get it on when you're feeling a bit low. That's the bit that people forget, that they've got these things, you know, because we've all probably got a playlist of favourite tracks, but we forget to play them at the time when it can probably help us most, which is when we're feeling a little bit down, feeling a bit fatigued, you know, maybe something's gone wrong. And it's like, okay, get the playlist out, reset. That's my word of the week. Let's just reset and see where we go next. Brilliant. Thanks for choosing that one, Sue. It's been such a pleasure to have you on the show. And I'm sure everybody listening at home has garnered so many insights as to how they can help themselves, how they can move their own businesses forward. So thank you for sharing your story today. How can people find out more? Where can they come to maybe talk to you personally?
Yeah, thank you. Well, first of all, thank you so much for inviting me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. Really good fun to talk through all of that, thinking back to the things that have happened. So thank you very much for the opportunity. It's been great fun.
Oh, my pleasure.
Well, you can get in touch through all the usual channels, of course. We Achieve, our website, LinkedIn, very active on, so you can find me there as well. Find out more about how we've been using the GC Index to really help some people have their personal impact, but also help teams and leadership teams to work together better and to really understand what is going on within their own teams and organizations, and hear more about HPWP and the sort of work that we've done to shift the thinking about how organizations are structured and how they incentivize and motivate and involve their employees. So I'd love to, if you just want to talk about those things, I get very passionate, so happy to have a chat. But please do find us through LinkedIn and our website too, at weachieve.co.uk.
Brilliant. And I can vouch for the fact that you do get passionate about that stuff. We were having a conversation off air, weren't we, about the impact that a top team and the way they operate, how it ripples down through the organization, and all of our work picks up on that. And it's good to explore.
So, yeah, absolutely.
You've been a wonderful guest. Thank you very much. I'm going to let you go now because we are done. That was the Change Show. It's been Simon Phillips, my very special guest, Sue Askew. We'll catch up again next week. In the meantime, go and have a fantastic week, and explore where the next chapter in your life might lead.